And welcome to Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have Dr. John Swanson. He is the chief of transplantation surgery at Christiana Care. He is also, well, you've been a volunteer, and you've been with the National Kidney Foundation as well.
Right. It's a great organization that provides funding, research, advocacy, services for a patient population that I've dealt with for the past 30 years, those patients with chronic kidney disease.
Before the show began, I said, you know, we never talk about kidney disease. Other organs seem to get all of the attention, and especially this time of year, obviously, and we don't talk about kidney health, and yet, do you want to throw some numbers at us and scare us a little bit about it?
Well, it's actually touches about one in seven persons in the United States, so about 37 million people have some level of chronic kidney disease. About 600,000 patients have end-stage kidney disease and are on dialysis. About 97,000 people are waiting on a list for a kidney transplant. Of those, 2,000 patients are on dialysis in Delaware, and about 400 patients are waiting for a kidney.
You mentioned chronic kidney disease. What does it normally do? What's its function with us when it's operating correctly?
Well, the kidney's main function is to maintain fluid balance. It gets rid of excess salt. It eliminates the waste of protein metabolism. It keeps our blood pressure regulated. It helps to monitor and keep our blood count correct so we don't get anemic. It monitors and corrects calcium and phosphorus. So it's sort of the silent factory that helps us, and all we do is complain about it when we are watching the Eagles game and we have to get up to void. But actually, when they don't work, then you understand how important they are.
It really is the workhorse of the body, because it sounds like it's touching on all of our systems.
I'm a little parochial, but I'd say yes.
Okay. Well, of course, you deal with kidneys. So what goes wrong? What I can think of a few things. Obviously, congenital problems, but also circulatory issues and hypertension.
Correct. So it's kind of the cart before the horse. Hypertension can cause kidney disease, predominantly in an African-American population, but it also can cause, the kidney disease itself can be the cause of hypertension because you don't remove sodium, you don't remove fluids. So it's hypertension is one cause. One of the things that's really happened is, thank goodness we've improved diabetic care in our country, but one of the offshoots of that, one of the unintended consequences is that within 15 to 20 years of diabetic diagnosis, people can develop kidney disease. And right now, that is the number one cause of kidney disease in our country, is diabetic. There are a number of patients who have some congenital issues, as you mentioned. Predominantly in kids, it may be an anatomic problem or a congenital deformation. We have patients that are develop something called polycystic kidney disease, and that's a disease that is unfortunately dominant in its traits, so that almost everybody in the family has it. And it's where it creates these huge grape-like kidneys that are grape, you know, like a bunch of grapes that may be 10, 15 pounds each, and ultimately lead to failure. That's about 9% of the patients. And then a number of patients develop something called, there's the small tufts of blood vessels in the kidneys. There's about a million per, called the glomerulus. That's where the actual filtration occurs. And various issues can cause them to gum up, if you will. And it can be a congenital issue, can be autoimmune type thing like lupus or other things. And so these diagnoses are lead to scarring of the kidney and ultimately failure.
I have a friend whose family had polycystic disease that ran through it. And so genetics does play a part in this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, so these are the things you have to know. And then it comes in the idea of planning for the future or planning about children and these type of things. Also impacts then, of course, living donation. And so if you have traits running in the family, then it limits the ability to do directed donation through a family, what we would call living related. But it still opens up for the idea that patients who have kidney disease can still get living unrelated kidneys. So what really matters is that these days you have a donor who's willing and healthy. And then we can find somebody that can take that kidney.
Does race and ethnicity play into kidney disease?
Absolutely. And we're finding disorder called metabolic syndrome, which includes diabetes, hypertension, overweight, and then it also leads to a kidney disease, and it tends to be quite familial. That's one thing. But there's also a apoprotein. It's a genetic situation that in the past was beneficial to avoid certain viral illnesses, but presently is probably leads to a higher incidence of kidney disease in African Americans.
So we've talked about diabetes, autoimmune disease, hypertension, et cetera, Earl. Is there something that we do lifestyle-wise? How do we damage our kidneys that is not disease-related?
Well, certainly one of the things, I guess you can call disease or not, but obesity in its own right can lead to chronic kidney disease. There's a nephropathy related to obesity. So weight loss, exercise, those 10,000 steps. Every one of our patients, we encourage them to get the 10,000 steps that are recommended, getting good exercise. So all those things are important. If you have hypertension and these other issues, treat it. Don't be afraid to treat your if your doctor gives you a medicine, try it, use it. Treating your cholesterol, all those things are actually important for heart, everything, but also kidney disease. So I encourage people just to live a healthy life.
And speaking of a healthy life, can diet affect this as well? And our fluid intake and alcohol intake?
Not the same as livers. Alcohol doesn't tend to affect kidneys in that way. But again, from an overall healthy lifestyle, liver disease can produce kidney failure. So you want to make sure those issues. Everyone should drink 2 liters per day of fluid, some type. It's good to have a good volume intake. Our patients, unfortunately, can't do that because they can't clear it. So that's one of the things. But up until that point, we encourage good intake. Diet has been a plus minus, whether that's helpful. But again, if you're obese, lose weight. If you have diabetes, you have to stick to the diet. And if you have hypertension, watch your salt.
I was going to say, so that salt like I do every morning is probably not a good idea.
I'm not going to. You know better.
But you know what? But look, I'm scrawny. I could too develop it though.
Absolutely. It's has no, particular things lead to greater incidence, but it has no particular target.
And what about age? Are you more likely as you get older, or?
Well, you do lose some kidney function with time, but age alone is not an indicator. And so sometimes what can happen is there is still can be a benefit from living donation, where as I've portrayed, I call it maturity now, a mature couple can donate to each other, one to another, if one has kidney failure and one is healthy and otherwise wants to regain their family. So we've had 60-year-old couples donating one to each other. And so age is a relative thing. It's you do have some diminishment. If you have these other events, it probably makes it worse. But for the overall part, age itself doesn't cause kidney failure.
Well, before we talk about your transplant program at ChristianaCare, can we talk just briefly about what the National Kidney Foundation does? Advocacy, research, education?
All those things, right. And it's really an all-encompassing organization. I think one of the great things they do are these KEEP programs, and it's essentially Keep Healthy. It's an acronym, and I'm afraid it's KEEP, so something with kidney. But what they do is they'll go into churches. They'll go into places that, from a community standpoint, would benefit from screening. And so getting a urine tested for protein, getting a creatinine tested, which is the measure of blood in the blood of kidney function, and getting these things done early, measuring blood pressure, all those things can be done, and they will provide these services at these various organizations, in these various things. A lot of times what will happen, I participate, a number of the nephrologists definitely participate. So you'll actually get to meet a kidney specialist at the same time as getting these things checked. So that's one of the really great thing. But research, certainly, they provide grants to young researchers who are trying to solve the kidney problem. They advocate nationally. And I think the biggest thing is just providing overall support. This is we call it an individual disease, if you will, but it's really a family disease. And I think they really incorporate that whole aspect of helping a family get through this problem.
Funny, I was just thinking that most people take a pee test today for a job, for drugs. Do doctors routinely check for kidney disease or to see how your kidney health is rated right now?
Not going to be a routine thing, I don't think. You'll get your cholesterol checked and you'll make sure. But if you can, a number called the creatinine. And the interesting thing is the creatinine is a measure of kidney function. It's an available measure of kidney function. It really doesn't tell the story, though, because it's based on age, based on gender, based on race, all these things that would tell you what is called your creatinine clearance. And that clearance number, the lower it goes, that's the definition of chronic kidney disease. And if it goes 60 or less, that would imply that you're in stage 3 chronic kidney disease. And you may not feel bad, but the problem is that I think awareness that people should be concerned. If you have some of these other issues, think about asking your doctor about measuring your kidney function or looking at your urine, because those are subtle things that could be found early that intervention could play a role.
I don't think I have had a test in, I can't remember when. I give the blood for the routine blood screen, but when you're going to the doctor and maybe you're not even aware you have hypertension or you might be pre-diabetic, etc., but you just go in for a routine checkup, is there any symptom that would say I should ask specifically about my kidney health and ask for a urine test?
Yeah, unfortunately at this level where you're sort of in the middle, that's stage 3, probably not a lot of symptoms. You may see some swelling of your legs because you're not getting rid of salt or water very well. Your blood pressure may be a problem when it hasn't been. Subtle things like that. So you may not really find. So once you get to that point, then at that point when you're at creatinine clearance or your number is stage 3, very commonly you're referred to a kidney specialist, a nephrologist, or you should be, because there are things that they can help dictate your care so that it gets directed towards prevention as opposed to maintenance.
So if you present with swelling and a higher blood pressure, your doctor is probably going to.
Probably, I would think so.
That's when they're going to start suspecting.
I would think so. And it usually comes up on a routine blood test called the this creatinine. And so that will give you some guidance. And it's kind of nice from we were always kind of, the number itself can be really deceiving because three of us in this room, you being a smaller female and me being a middle-sized person, male, if we had a creatinine of 1, our creatinine clearance would be different. And so most systems now, including us at Christiana Care, have added the idea of measuring this clearance so that your doctor will know, not just from the number, but will know based on various factors in a formula that you are, even though you have a normal creatinine, you may have chronic kidney disease.
Uh-huh. And if you would like more information about what we are talking about today, there is a National Kidney Foundation chapter near you. Wherever you're hearing this, go to kidney.org and you will be able to find out information that is pertinent to where you happen to be. And they have all kinds of information on that website for you. Now, there is a great event, the National Kidney Foundation Kidney Walk. And this is a great fundraiser. If you're interested, go to kidneywalk.org. That's kidneywalk.org, and there are kidney walks all over the country. Again, wherever you may be, you're going to have the opportunity to get out there and fundraise for the National Kidney Foundation. Now, I'm Laura Lewis, and today we are talking to Dr. John Swanson. He is Chief of Transplantation Surgery at Christiana Care. Let's talk about that. You mentioned the family. So obviously everybody lives with kidney disease if somebody has kidney disease. So would you like to talk about the progression first and treatment when it is early and then as it progresses? And Sure. Then when do you enter the picture?
Right. Once a person is referred to a nephrologist, then you start talking about potentially planning for progression to end stage. But first thing is always is to make sure that blood pressure is best controlled. Certain medications can be used to help the kidneys filter better, even though they do both blood pressure control plus other things. So getting those right medications are important. Making sure that if you're a diabetic, I would encourage you to consider an endocrinologist. Many family practitioners can manage it well, but if you've got difficult diabetes where you're moving towards chronic kidney disease, I think you should be with an endocrinologist, a diabetes specialist. And then at that point, so managing, maintaining all these things. No matter what you do, however, it may progress. And as you continue to progress, when it gets down to that number goes from 60 down to 30, percent essentially of function, then what happens, you start talking about preparing for potential dialysis and those type of things. So you start monitoring and moderating, because if you're going to do hemodialysis or peritoneal dialysis or consider transplant, those are all things you start talking about, thinking about. Again, always maintaining, trying to keep yourself away from that situation. as it progresses further down to about 15%, at that point, then you're really likely to move on to chronic kidney disease. And then at that point, we would talk to you about dialysis access, protect an arm, protect so that the veins are protected. So in case you need that, what's called an arteriovenous fistula or a dialysis access, or you're considering peritoneal dialysis, that you understand what that is all about. But interestingly enough, and I kind of got ahead of myself a little bit, because when your creatinine clearance is 20 or less, so you essentially, if you look at it being 20% or less, you can actually get listed actively for a kidney transplant before you start dialysis. So patients who have chronic kidney disease stage 4, that's 30 to 15 of that number, they should be looking to at least consider talking to a transplant program, because they could get preemptively listed and start gaining time well before that. The other nice thing about that is that when a person's not in extremis because of need for dialysis immediately or that type of thing, or you have a long planning period, you can plan for living donation. And at that point, it works better because you're not under the gun, so to speak, and people can be worked up, or the timing can be appropriate, so that when you are determined that you need to do dialysis, we can actually move to transplant instead.
I was going to ask about your placement on the list, et cetera, if you are waiting for a kidney and you don't have a living option there. Obviously, the healthier you are going into surgery, the better the outcome anyway.
Right, exactly. So that's one of the major benefits of living donation, is that the kidney is not put through all the trauma of a deceased owner. But the other issue is that you can time it and do it earlier, as you point out, when a person's healthier. The longer you're on dialysis, it puts you at risk for greater graft loss and patient loss. And so you have to be getting transplanted as soon as possible is the key.
And unfortunately, multiple transplants are not uncommon, are they, with kidney disease?
Right. We would like to think that all kidneys are going to live forever. But unfortunately, they, based on age, based on some other factors, they have what we call a half-life. How long do half of them last? And so you have to play that out and decide when you accept a kidney. One kidney may, on average, have less life survival, but if you need to get off dialysis and get, it might be the right kidney for you, even though you might need a second one. So, but if you want a chance for, the greatest chance for a kidney to last the longest, get a living donor.
Okay, so let's talk about the program there, and then we can get into where you get most of those kidneys and how living donation works and how you create, I understand there are chains.
That's correct. So a person is hopefully, again, at that level where they're nearly at 20% of function, will be referred. Some people just aren't really sure about what they want. They may be on dialysis already. Interestingly enough, in 2014, the whole process changed that people got credit for being time on dialysis, not the time they came to the transplant program. So that gave people who had that second thought, weren't sure about transplant, maybe had some bad family experience or something like that, and then decided, I do want a transplant. They didn't lose time. So if a person has been on dialysis 5 years and comes to my program today, we actually had our listing conference today, our listing clinic today, if they're on dialysis for 5 years, as soon as they get listed, they have 5 years plus that one day, or whatever they are from time to dialysis. However, to my point, though, is that if a person is not on dialysis, then they need to get on the list as soon as possible to start gaining time, and that's that 20% or less. So people get referred, and then they go through an evaluation process, which can be, you know, you want to make sure people are the healthiest of the healthy, and that you can, from the standpoint of, in the context of kidney failure, right, that they can tolerate the surgery, the long-term effects of the immune suppression, those type of things. Mm-hmm. So once the patient is listed, then they are... they have an option to get any of the kidneys that come to us through the deceased pool.
And obviously, you can live with one kidney.
That's correct. That's correct. Or else we actually wouldn't be doing living donation.
Yeah, I know. Right? I thought you had to mention that, though. You know.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. And that's what people do. That's right. It's sometimes a misconception that with a kidney transplant, you get one kidney. And you do you do well with it.
And so, how many transplants do you do? Your program, how many do you do in the course of a year or a time or you know?
We're too small. We do about 25, 30, up to 35, and always looking to expand it. But there's a lot of programs, so but we're very happy with our results, proud with our results. And I think one of the things that we offer the most is we're Delaware. And I think that's a whole different population, and we understand Delawareans, and I think we provide that level of service that they like.
Well, life on dialysis is very restrictive as far as fluid intake, diet, and also, of course, undergoing the procedure, and it wears and tears the body. Transplant, that offers what to somebody?
Well, particularly with a living donor kidney, which tends to work right away. About a third of deceased donor kidneys don't work immediately because whatever made the donor a donor can lead to some what we call acute or early kidney injury, and that will need some time to recover. They do recover, but it may take some time. And actually, a patient, those 30% of patients, might need some dialysis after transplant just to wait, let the kidney wake up. Living donor kidneys tend to work right away. And because you avoid all those things that are involved with the deceased donor, it's pretty amazing how quickly when the kidney's functioning, things turn around, and patients' families notice it almost immediately. Like the next day, they'll say, "Your color is different. You're not as sallow. You're not whatever." They notice the difference, and now reversing kidney failure that's going on for 5, 6 years or 7 years is not going to happen overnight. And I always tell our patients, maybe it's kind of over the top, but I say, give us 90 days, we'll give you a lifetime. And so I think it does take some time to adjust to the immune suppression and, you know, converting from, you know, where you can't drink fluid, a liter a day. Now all of a sudden we're saying drink 2 to 2.5 liters a day. That's hard for people. Changing their diet, doing some other things that, you know, the immune suppressive drugs in their own right have some issues. And so it takes about 90 days, I think, for really people to really get back into gear, but you see things immediately once the kidneys start functioning.
What happens to the person who is making the donation? How do you decide if it's the right kidney? And we're talking living here. And what's the lifestyle for that person? What happens in the actual surgeries? Surgeries, because there are two going on.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So I like to say it's almost like a choreography of a ballet. So the living donor comes in first. Proceed, and then making sure that everything what we saw in CT scan or our evaluation was the same, and we find it. Then we bring the donor in first. I'm sorry. Then the recipient. Then the recipient's in the next room, and proceed there. Open up the recipient. Make sure that everything is right there. Then we go. Okay, we're ready. We're ready. Remove the kidney. Take it over and sew it right into the recipient. So it's like an hour. When the whole process that it's on ice, every kidney has to be iced for a little bit, but it goes sewn right in and usually starts working immediately. And then the donor is closed, and most people are tending to do it with a laparoscopic technique. So you don't have to have the major incisions and that type of thing, particularly in the flank. And so patients recover pretty quickly from it. But to become a donor, you have to just be the healthiest of the healthy and willing. And what we talked about with paired chains and stuff, we just mentioned it, but, you know, you don't really even have to be blood type compatible anymore. You really, because if you want to donate for somebody, we'll find somebody to receive it. And then it can come back through a chain. We were part of a 35-person chain where our patients were number 16. They went around the country twice. And it was started by a young lady in New York who donated to the list because she wanted to help out. Started the chain, and 35 people got a living donor kidney because of that one person's choice. So that's always the goal, is to make chains if you can. But if you do direct donation, the process is you be evaluated, you get lots of testing. I always tell patients, Bill Gates doesn't get this kind of a physical. You'll find out more about your health than you probably want to know, or you'll find out how really healthy you are if you become a donor. And so we then... after that's done, we time up with the recipient, and with the timing of it, you can make sure that the healthiest of their status, the recipient. So it's and then we meet in the operating room and we go from there. The recipients, the donors, I always do warn them. I'm a urologist by my training. I tend to do the donors mainly in my programs, and I always tell them, though, you know, you're healthy, and most of our patients have never had surgery. They've never had really anything. Mm-hmm. And so when they go through this, I always warn them that you will be tired. You'll be fatigued, because that's how the body recovers. And rest is important. Rest is restorative. And so when they come at me at 14 days, I said, tired? yes. I said, I think we told you. I know it's hard because you're seeing your recipient who all of a sudden jumps up and is now a miracle person, right? It changes dramatically, and the donor's kind of, you know, not limping along, but they have to recover. And I think for most of them, it's such a shock because they've never had surgery. They've never had a problem. And so, but they make it through. And I think every program in the country has now really been dedicated to make sure that the donor's experience is the best it can be, and their outcomes the best they can be.
Do patients, and we're running out of time, do patients contact you directly at ChristianaCare?
Yes, they do. And we have a website where you can learn about, and actually from the standpoint, our website has a screener. So if people want to donate, but they're not really sure about whether or not they qualify, they can actually get on, answer 10 basic questions that say, you know, red, yellow, or green, whether or not they can even consider donation. I mean, if somebody has diabetes and hypertension, they're not a donor, and that will tell them they're red. If they have maybe some questions, they may be a yellow. Call us, and we'll figure it out. If they're green, definitely call us, and we'll get you in to donate. Most referrals come from nephrologists or their kidney specialists, and that's the way it should be, I think, because you want to have a concerted effort to treat these patients. We're going to have a lot of needs, and it takes both a surgeon and a medical person to deal with it.
And, of course, the National Kidney Foundation has been there all along with the research and funding the programs to make sure that these transplants are as good as possible and to work towards prevention and maybe medical treatment to keep them out from under the knife. But the National Kidney Foundation relies on funding, obviously, to do that, and that's where the Kidney Walk comes in. And what happens at a kidney walk?
Well, it's a terrific event where you actually get to meet, if you will, people who are experiencing the problem. And it's a kidney walk, but there's a kidney run. But the walk is because we want to encourage our patients to participate. And most of our patients can't do the run. We're hoping someday they can with their transplant. But from that standpoint, it's a way to get to actually meet people who experience the problem, meet the families who experience the problem, and really get to understand what it's all about. And I think you can also educate yourself about, you know, potential that if you experience the same problems or your family members, because, again, I think we're finding out that with 37 million people potentially involved, there's a lot of silent disease that needs to be discovered.
And it's a fun event, too.
Absolutely. It absolutely is fun. We try to do everything we can. We have people come with stretching and, you know, pre-exercises. To get everybody in shape, and there's music, and the venue is always great. It's right there on the waterfront, and everybody has a very good time.
And, of course,
supporting a very good cause.
And it's supporting a very good cause, and the funds stay local.
And the funds stay local, and I'm very, very pleased to assure people of that.
And of course, if you'd like more information about that, kidneywalk.org. That's kidneywalk.org, and that will help you find the walk that is closest to you, kidneywalk.org. And for more information about the National Kidney Foundation, kidney.org, you can find your local chapter through that website. And go to ChristianaCare, their website. Of course, if you are interested in becoming a donor, if you'd like more information about their programs, go to ChristianaCare.org.
As in Oregon.
And I have to say thank you now to Dr. John Swanson. He is the chief of transplantation surgery at ChristianaCare. Thank you for coming in today.
It's been my pleasure.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Philadelphia Focus.